VOI. If you're talking about it,
it's always about the money. Everything else is just conversation.
We're talking about it.
No excuses. Just find a way to get it done.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Chris Walton and Paul J. Schneider on the News and Talk of Idaho, 670 KBOI.
Top of the morning, Paul J. and Chris on a Thursday morning. A couple of strange stories there. One of them is really strange, and one of this first story.
Is this the really strange one?
No.
Oh.
This is why I will not have a car that drives itself.
Okay.
At least three people were killed, more than 100 hurt, and others remained trapped after a crowded train slammed into a busy station in Hoboken, New Jersey, during this morning's commute.
Uh-huh.
Fox 5 in Hoboken confirmed three people are dead.
100 injured, yeah.
At least one was female. I don't know why they put that in there. Law enforcement source told Fox News many of the injured were in critical condition, according to a New Jersey Transit spokesman.
So this was a bad train crash.
It never slowed down. Commuter Jim Finnan of River Edge, New Jersey, told Fox News the train never slowed down before it crashed through barriers and into the terminal's reception area.
Wow.
Photos show Silver Streak, right?
Yeah.
The end of Silver Streak? It's exactly what this was. Photos showed major structural damage.
But, you know, without Richard Pryor.
Without Richard Pryor to the Hoboken terminal, including twisted beams and a wall that was just gone. More than 100 patients needed treatment, emergency workers said. Witnesses said a woman was pinned under concrete.
Mm-hmm.
Many other people were bleeding.
Well, and now the waiting area is no longer structurally sound. They're probably going to have to rebuild the whole thing.
There's a train in there, Chris.
Yeah.
Hoboken has the highest percentage of transit ridership of any city in the country. More than 50,000 people use the terminal daily. Well, they're not going to be using this room tomorrow.
It's one of the busiest
stations in the country.
In the New Jersey transit system, mm-hmm. Definitely.
Crash appeared to be accidental and not intentional. The National Transportation Safety Board said it was gathering information. Finnan, who was the writer, described the crash as feeling like he was in an off-road vehicle. More than 20 ambulances sped to the terminal to take injured passengers to hospital. The train carried 250, and out of 250, 100 went to the hospital.
Wow. Jason Danahy, listen to this one. Jason Danahy was on the train on the Pascack Valley line that crashed this morning. He said the train was filled with commuters and pulling into the station when it abruptly came to a halt, you know, because it crashed into the building. He says, from the fifth car,
no more tracks.
From the fifth car, it felt like a major skid, he said, a creaking noise and a skid. I was lucky to be on the fifth car.
Yes, he was. Most of the injured appeared to be passengers in the first train car or people standing around inside the station.
He says when he got off the train, it was chaotic. He says, I saw bloody noses. You know, because a lot of people were just sitting there, and then when it stopped abruptly,
reading the paper or whatever.
They were thrown forward and hit their nose on the seat ahead of them. He says, I saw people crying. Ben Fairclough, who is 35 years old, said he was transferring at the station when he saw the derailed train, which was blocking part of the terminal. There were wires down, water pouring from the ceiling, the roof had collapsed, and there were people coming out of windows of the train, he said. He said one person appeared to be unconscious on the ground. Others were bleeding. Cars drive into houses, he said. This was a train that drove into a terminal.
At full speed.
And a spokesman for CarePoint Health said four patients had been transported from the station to Hoboken University Medical Center, with more expected.
Yeah, that's an early story because I've got 100.
Mm.
Rail service obviously suspended in and out of Hoboken, directly across the river from New York City. The New York Waterway Ferry Service offered to take passengers into New York. It's not the first crash there, Chris.
If you are someone's boss and they are in a train crash, do you give them the day off?
Heck yes.
Yeah, I would think so.
Similar crash at the station December 1985 left 30 people injured. This apparently far worse than that. 100 in hospitals, many of them in critical condition, at least 3 dead.
Yeah.
So far, it's the latest thing we have. All right, KBOI News Time is 8:45.
Boise police are asking for your help today as they search for a missing 18-year-old girl. Details coming up on 670 KBOI.
Remember, you are listening to Paul, Jay, and Chris on 670 KBOI.
KBOI News Time, 8:50. MSNBC now also saying 3 dead. CNN and Fox News continue to say 1 dead. It's funny because the story I read was off Fox News website, and it said 3 dead.
Yeah, left hand and right hand don't know what the other is doing.
Well, yeah, one of them is done by local and the other one by national.
Billy of Boise has written in to ask this question. This train crash is not the norm, so how do they know so quickly that it was an accident and not terrorist activity? How do we know for sure in this day and age that the person at fault is not a terrorist? I have not heard them explain yet what caused the crash or what the problem was.
There was a line in my story, and I'm sorry, but the story has gone off my screen now.
Right.
I'm having computer problems. It basically said it was not...
Not terrorism.
No, it didn't say it wasn't terrorism. It said it was not human-caused or something like that.
Intentionally, yeah. It was just a mechanical thing.
Yeah, but it did indicate that it wasn't terrorism.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would wonder the same thing. How did you rule out terrorism immediately if a train derailed and people...
I know the answer
did,
to that.
...did get killed. You know, I mean, if it was a mechanical error, how do you know it wasn't a forced mechanical error?
Well, yeah. It just tells me they know what happened.
Yeah, well, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, and I don't, you know, if you could explain it to me 100 times, and I probably wouldn't necessarily understand how a train derails.
But all I'm saying... is that is why you and I will never drive cars that don't have drivers.
Well, I agree with that.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I have no desire to...
speed off a freeway at 100 miles
an hour while you're dozing. I don't mind being in the passenger seat or the back seat of a car that someone actually is driving who isn't me. But, you know, if there were no driver and we're just, you know, cruising on down the road, I don't trust those yet.
Yeah, you're at the mercy of a robot.
100 years from now when I won't even be here anyway... maybe they'll have those perfected.
Yeah. Want to know what you think of this story. And with all of the Black Lives Matter protests, do you think there will be counter-protests? I think it's human nature that there will be.
What kind of counter-protests?
Okay, like in Mountain Home where they painted the Black Lives Matter people, painted that parking space, remember that? And then
Kids painted it, but they painted it in support of Black Lives Matter.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But what happened? Who was across the street? Guys waving Confederate
flags. That's right. The guys waving Confederate flags showed up to say that they're against Black Lives Matter. And so that started a whole big thing, which is why the superintendent ultimately said, just paint over all the parking spots. And, you know, it's weird to paint a parking spot anyway, because if there is a
Could
car
be distracting.
Well, especially if there's a car that uses the parking spot, you're not going to see the artwork until it moves, right? Because they paint it on the ground and you park on top of it.
But everybody was upset because they didn't tell them they would be painted over. But anyway, all right, that's what I think. The counter protests are going to start popping up.
Okay.
Hope I'm wrong. Don't think I am. An East Tennessee State University student. Did you hear about this?
Two of my nephews went there.
Was arrested a week after wearing a gorilla mask and carrying a rope during Black Lives Matter protest on the East Tennessee State campus. Trishan Reitke was charged with civil rights intimidation. Ever heard that before?
No, it sounds like a hate crime, though. But this was a person who was not part of Black Lives Matter. It was somebody who was protesting against them.
Well, I would think so, although it doesn't really say that. He was charged with civil rights intimidation following the incident, according to a Johnson City Police Department report. Earlier this week, as students protested recent police shootings, Ratke walked amongst the crowd wearing a gorilla mask and offering protesters bananas attached to a rope.
So was that supposed to be...
I don't have a clue.
Some sort of racist prank?
Gorilla thing? I don't know. Grant Madison, a junior at the university, told USA Today he was talking with a friend when Ratke walked up to him. He passed me by and handed me a banana, he said. I snatched it out of his hand. I knew what he was trying to say, but I wasn't going to retaliate against him.
So what was he trying to say?
Well, I don't know. See, I don't know the guy's motivation.
Well, it's difficult to speculate because in order to speculate, you have to use a bunch of insults that he may have meant.
Exactly. Martin, who live streamed the incident on Facebook, and there's a whole bunch of pictures in USA Today, said the young man stood there and taunted protesters for 15 minutes. As younger black folks, we don't always see the same over displays of racism that our parents may have experienced or our grandparents.
Yeah, true.
He said, for me, it was the first time I've experienced something so blatantly disrespectful and racist. So he at least thinks, basically, the guy's purpose was to compare blacks to simians.
Well, yeah. Like, well, and this is supposedly in British countries, you know, Ireland or the former British Empire countries, there's a lot of that going on where the white guys will say, hey, go back and live in the trees, you know, just really, really insulting stuff.
The guy's backpack had a Confederate flag on it. Draw your own conclusions. WOI News Time, 8:56. Time for a news break. We'll be back with another hour of Idaho Talks Live.
If you're talking about it,
it's always about the money. Everything else is just conversation.
We're talking about it.
No excuses. Just find a way to get it done.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Chris Walton and Paul J. Schneider on the News and Talk of Idaho, 670 KBOI.
All right, we are back. KBOI News Time, 9:06. 9:06 in the morning. Let's go to the phone. Steve in Boise hung on through the news. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, guys. You know, you're talking about the technology that we're experiencing in this country.
Yeah, like in a train wreck, okay?
Yeah, and all of this technology, I'm not sure that the human is able to keep up with it. And the reason I say that is that last month after I got rear-ended, I just assumed that the gal was paying attention to something else. I didn't know that it was a cell phone or a texting. But, you know, we've had that don't text and drive campaign going for a year.
Yeah.
And I've been made very aware of the texting because I do a lot of driving around this town.
Yeah, me
and
too. I see the people. I do too.
Yesterday afternoon, I was driving down Maple Grove, and the gal in front of me, there was so much room in front of her because she was sitting there on the phone texting as she was driving. I got up to the light there at Fairview, and she was hanging back from the car in front of her, and I had to jump the curb to get around her to get in the turn lane to go right. And I get up there, and here she is on her phone just texting away, paying no attention to the traffic around her.
Well, and you notice that at stoplights, you know, the light will turn green.
And they're still sitting there texting.
They just sit there until you honk at them, and they go, oh.
Yeah. And it just amazes me that we have this campaign. Everyone's aware of it, and yet they still do it.
Well, it's just like, just say no, man. That didn't work either.
And it cost me a whole lot of grief. I might get my truck back this week, but probably next week after having it out of commission for about 3 weeks getting repaired.
Yeah.
The body shops are so overwhelmed now.
No question.
Texting and driving.
Yep. It's
we got to do something. Well, we got any ideas out there from our audience?
Yeah, give us a call if you got an idea. I mean, it's against the law already, and there's a fine already.
If car manufacturers would come up with something that disabled cell phones, You know, there's some parts of the phone you can use, but the texting part of it needs to go away. I know on the Lexus you can't plug in information on your Garmin if you're driving. And they need to do something like that, you know, with the cell phones. If it's in motion, it can't be used.
You know, Steve, though, we shouldn't have to do that. People should be responsible for their own actions, but they're not.
But that's the problem, Paul.
I know.
What I'm saying. Technology has surpassed the human capacity.
I think you're right.
Just a matter of time until they
so
set
depressing.
Up until they set up Skynet.
Yeah. Big Brother's watching us.
Mm-hmm. Then the Terminators will start arriving.
Exactly.
Yeah, boy, sci-fi in motion, huh?
It is. Thanks, Steve.
You bet. See you guys.
Nobody's responsible for their own actions anymore. It drives me insane, which is a short drive, admittedly. Let's go to Mike in Boise. Mike.
Good morning.
Morning.
The texting and driving, a little history on that. You know, our current congressman, Labrador, you know, blocked the legislation to make that against the law back
nationally.
When he was in the Idaho legislature.
Yeah.
And then after he left, they got it through. But the problem is the fine is nothing.
Oh,
and
really?
It's not significant. It's like $50 something like that. It's just not even there because nobody wanted to really put teeth in it. But if you go back in history, and I know you've lived around here, remember when if you went through a school zone and you were going too fast, it was an extra $10 fine.
Right.
And people just did
went
it.
Too fast.
Then when they raised it to an extra $150 fine, you noticed everybody started putting their brake lights on.
It's true.
And if you put a fine of $300...
And publicized it.
That's one thing about it. If you get caught texting and driving and you get a ticket for $300, you will never do it again, and you'll tell all your friends.
That's true.
You're still going to have the stupid people do the stupid things. But if you're gonna get somebody's attention on it, and get everybody to think a little different, the fine needs to be enough that it will make you think.
I agree. It needs to be significant and enough to be a deterrent.
At what point does a fine become ridiculous, though?
Well, you know, that's always the question on, you know, if you fine somebody $10,000 for drunk driving. First off, that person's not going to have that amount of money anyway.
True.
And I've always
Chances
argued
are, yeah.
when I, when you hear those, well, they'll serve 5 years and get a fine for $50,000. Well, you know, they're never going to pay that. But I think, you know, you get that fine at around $300, it's going to wake somebody up.
I agree.
And that's a good answer. I mean, $300 might not be considered ridiculous, but I think $10,000 is.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mike. Good stuff. And that's a good call, and he's absolutely right. If you have, I don't know, when does a fine bite into you?
Oh, me?
Yeah.
I'd say starting with a parking fine in downtown Boise.
That's getting pretty expensive, too. But, you know.
That's the lowest one I can think of, but yeah,
okay.
it would already bite into my weekly budget.
$300 would get your attention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would get my attention for a couple months.
Yeah. Let's go to Donnie in Meridian. Donnie, good morning.
Good morning. How are y'all?
Good.
Hey, so in California, they just have the cops roll down on sometimes bicycles or motorcycles, and they just write one ticket after another. They start at $100, you know, when the traffic stopped. Mm-hmm. And then when I was stationed in Schofield in Hawaii 10 years back, they would post a military police officer kind of in the bushes, and anyone they saw going by, he reported on the radio. And, you know, a block down the road, they had a fleet of officers waiting to pull people over to write mm-hmm. $150 tickets on that for texting and driving.
Did it work?
I would think so.
Yeah, I would too.
Yeah.
That's why it's always kind of amused me that people will try to outrun the police on a freeway because, you know, before you get to the next exit, they can have more police waiting for
you. Yeah, try to outrun those radio waves. Doesn't work. All right, good stuff, Donnie. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to be at Schofield Barracks right now.
Yeah, me too.
You know, exactly
where it is, as do I.
Not necessarily. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Not necessarily doing anything in a military sense, but just being in Hawaii would be fun.
Yeah, yeah, it would be. All right, let's take a break. We'll be back with more of your phone calls. It's 9:14.
This is Idaho Talks Live. Today at 10, listen to Rush on 670 KBOI.
KBOI News Time, 9:19. KBOI rewards code TRAIN. 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 As in Hoboken.
Or Hey Soul Sister.
Yeah. Go to 670KBOI.com, enter TRAIN, and earn today's 5,000 rewards points. Let's go to Brad and Eagle. Brad, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Sorry, musical interlude there.
How are we today?
We're good.
So I'll give you my take. If we're going to have fines, they need to be proportional. They need to actually affect the person who's being fined. So if you've got an income of, you know, $250,000 a year, your speeding in a school zone ticket should be $1,500, $2,000.
Why?
It's unconstitutional.
Yeah, why should it be any more than anybody else's?
Why? Because in order to make the fine effective, it actually has to affect the person that's being fined.
Yeah, but you can't do that.
Europe does it.
Well, good for them.
We're not
there. Of course. Have a good day.
Well, yeah, I mean, no, I don't necessarily like that idea. I can understand his point. I mean, if you're, you know, if you have $10 million in the bank and they fine you $30, I mean, you probably don't even notice it. Whereas if you have...
So what are you going to do, fine them $3 million?
If you have $27 in the bank and they fine you $30, then you notice it.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, that doesn't seem the least bit fair.
Brad hung up.
That just because you have more money, you should have to pay a larger fine for something that you do.
I just don't think that's very constitutional.
It's not that I have more money. It's just that I
having
have,
a sliding,
you know,
scale.
Of course, planning to eventually.
And how would they figure out how much to fine you? They'd have to hire another branch of
they'd
government.
They'd have to look at your last year's tax return. This is all getting very complicated.
Yeah, but what if you lost your job in February?
Well, then you can commit crimes for free.
It's just silly. Come on, Brad.
Yeah, well, and see, part of that would be if you're homeless and have not a cent to your name.
So your fine is nothing.
Your fine would be I guess, nothing.
Yeah. It's kind of like paying taxes.
Yeah, well.
50% of the country doesn't pay taxes.
It would be.
So 50% of the country wouldn't be fined.
Now, I will say this. If you don't pay your taxes, the fine may reflect your income level.
Yeah, that's true.
Because I know if I didn't pay my taxes, I doubt they'd fine me as much as they did, say, Willie Nelson.
Yeah. A lot of people, thinking about Gary Johnson now. Just we got a couple of minutes before a break. The Libertarian candidate for president.
Yeah.
Third party. You know, I don't like Trump. I don't like Clinton. I'm voting for Gary Johnson.
Right.
Another tough night for him last night on the campaign trail. Did you hear about this?
Yeah, he just keeps running into things he doesn't know the meaning of.
Yeah. Couldn't come up with the name of a foreign leader during an interview.
Mm-hmm.
Not just a foreign leader.
Any foreign leader.
Who's your favorite foreign leader? MSNBC's Chris Matthews asked Johnson, who was being interviewed beside his running mate, former Massachusetts Governor Bill Weld. Matthews pushed Johnson to pick anyone. Anyone from any country, any continent,
so
anyone.
He could have said Putin, could have said Queen Elizabeth.
Could have said
anybody, like
yeah. After an apparently confused Johnson repeated the question, he said, go ahead, pick anybody. Name one foreign leader you respect and look up to, Matthews said, anybody.
Well, he finally came up with the name of, the former president of Mexico.
Well, Shimon Peres, his vice presidential one, said. And then Matthews said, I'm talking about somebody living.
Well, yeah, but didn't he end up saying Vicente Fox at the end?
Who? Let me see. I haven't got that far yet.
Is not a current world leader, but used to be a president of Mexico.
Matthew said, anywhere, any continent, Canada, Mexico, Europe, over there, Asia, South America, Africa, name a foreign leader you respect.
Mm-hmm.
Johnson continued to fumble. I guess I'm having an Aleppo moment, Johnson said, referring to a much lampooned moment in an interview earlier this month
when they asked
where
him,
he responded, what is Aleppo?
What would you do about Aleppo? And he says, well, what is Aleppo?
Yeah.
And they said, seriously, you don't know what Aleppo is?
Yeah. City in Syria that's been decimated by the war. I'm giving you the whole world.
And again, he says, his thing was, how many people do you think even know what Aleppo is? And whoever answered that question said, well, based on whether or not you're running for president, I would say most of the people running for president do know.
Yeah. I'm giving you the whole world, Matthews continued. Anybody in the world you like, anybody, pick any leader. Johnson said the former president of Mexico.
Yeah, Vicente Fox.
Which one? Matthews asked. I'm having a brain freeze, Johnson said, as Weld began to shout out names of recent Mexican presidents. Fox, thank you, Johnson said when he finally heard the name of former Mexican president Vicente Fox.
Do you think it's a coincidence that he doesn't do it right now, but he's been a longtime user of marijuana? And the fact that he has brain freezes quite often, do you think there's any connection there whatsoever?
I don't know.
I'm going to go with yes.
I don't know. You know, if I ask you this question in the hall,
yeah,
or you ask me, we could come up with somebody. We're not running for president. I mean,
yeah. Okay, how about the Chancellor of Australia?
Yeah.
Christian Kern.
Yeah. Or
not Australia, Austria. So excuse me.
Yeah.
Because I was going to say, because your daughter lived in Austria and you recently went there.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel.
Yeah. Or as they say over there, Angela Merkel.
Merkel. All right. What we're going to do now, it's the 9 o'clock hour. And be caller number 6 right now at 336-3711, and you'll be in the drawing for the great Hawaii trip for two to watch the Boise State Broncos play the Rainbow Warriors. Be caller number 6.
At 336-3711, 336-3711, caller number 6 right now.
Remember, you are listening to Idaho Talks Live on 670 KBOI.
KBOI News Time, 9:36. Keep waiting for the voice to jump in and sing. From Ferguson in North Charleston to Tulsa in Charlotte, fatal police shootings seem to be happening with alarming regularity. We're going to talk a little bit now about why the blacks that are shot always seem to die, and the white bomber gets shot in the leg. Police officers sometimes must make split-second decisions, no question, under pressure, no question, about whether or not to fire their weapon. It's not an easy job, but some of those killed by police in recent years have been unarmed, including the guy yesterday, sparking outrage in communities across the U.S. and raising questions. Why do the police have to kill these people? Are there other ways to defuse a potentially dangerous situation without someone getting fatally shot?
Some of these stories too that come out, where somebody has been shot by police, they quite often fail to report that there's been an hour or two before the shooting where they were trying to talk the person out of whatever that was they were doing.
Yeah.
Now, in the case of traffic stops, that's not the case. But in a lot of these, where somebody might be suicidal.
Yeah, well, like the case yesterday.
The guy in El Cajon. They claim, and I have not seen the tape yet, but they claim that he...
You haven't seen it?
No. Does he actually make a...
Let me show you what he did.
Okay. Okay, I will describe for others what you are doing. Oh, okay. He bent over and looked like he was in a shooting stance.
And he was holding an electronic cigarette.
Well, that's too bad that...
I know.
That he had to get shot for holding an electronic cigarette, but when you pointed it at it as if you have a gun.
Yep.
I mean, let's put it this way. If you're one of the people at whom he is pointing, you don't wait until he pulls the trigger before you do.
Yeah.
That's just kind of natural, I suppose.
Well, yeah, and plus, he was tased, I think, like an instant before he was shot. But he was shot like 5 times.
Patrick of Caldwell wrote in to say, hey, guys, Brad has a good idea. And the reason it works in Europe, that thing about the big fines, the reason it works in Europe is because they don't have a constitution that guarantees them equal protection under the law. That is there to prevent exactly what he suggests.
Yeah, see, the problem
he's right about it working in Europe, apparently.
Yeah, the problem I have with this whole thing is if they base it on your tax structure, your income, whatever, half the people will not be fined at all for texting and driving because they don't pay any taxes. All right, to gain a better understanding of police officers' use of deadly force, CNN interviewed Cedric Alexander, a nationally recognized policing expert and veteran police chief who was called in to review the Ferguson, Missouri Police Department after the 2014 fatal shooting of Michael Brown. Alexander, currently chief of police in DeKalb County, which is Atlanta. Officers are trained to shoot to stop, which often results in a homicide, Alexander said. And this is what you have said many times. They aim for the center mass of a person's chest because it's a target they're most certain to hit because it's the biggest.
Yeah.
And most likely to bring the suspect down.
Well, and there are always complaints from people who say, you know, why did you have to shoot him this number of times? Well, because if the first bullet doesn't immediately stop them, you just follow it with a second, a third, and a fourth, and one of them probably will.
Yeah, Alexander says even a skilled marksman would have difficulty hitting a suspect's arm or leg in a fast-moving situation.
Yeah, true.
Or even all that shooting their gun out of their hands was cowboy movies.
Even a slow-moving situation, there are people just can't, or they don't have the accuracy shooting that they assume they will.
Yeah, and a wounded suspect could still shoot the officer or someone else.
Yeah, exactly.
Which some people don't.
Which is why they don't shoot once and then wait and see what happens. Because waiting and seeing what happens will get you killed.
Next question. Why do officers fire so many shots? Most officers today carry semi-automatic pistols instead of revolvers. 20 years ago, officers were trained to fire one or two rounds and then assess whether they need to keep shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Now officers are trained to assess the threat level while firing, which means the officer may pull the trigger multiple times before the suspect has fallen. All right, and here's a question everybody asks. Why don't officers pause while shooting to reassess the threat? An armed suspect may still be able to return fire if the officer pauses during shots.
It depends sometimes on the caliber with which you are shot.
True.
But, you know, if you get shoot, let's say this, you get shot with a 22.
Yeah, 22 short.
There are some people that wouldn't immediately feel that because it just kind of slips through you. Like if you've ever shot a beer can with a 22, the can doesn't necessarily flip up in the air like they do on television. The bullet will probably pass right through it because it's soft aluminum.
Yeah.
And it might even, the can might not even move.
Yeah. Semi-automatic pistols carry many more rounds than six-shot revolvers, and magazines make for quick reloading.
Yeah,
Modern police doctrine stresses firing until the law enforcement officers and the public are safe.
Mm-hmm. The cycle is very slow because, as you said, it's an automatic cycle.
Yeah. All right. Why don't police use tasers? Legally, officers are only to fire when they feel their life or someone else's life is in danger.
Mm-hmm.
Different officers are going to perceive a threat differently. We had that in the El Cajon shooting.
Yeah.
One used a taser.
The other one
used a gun.
Used a gun. And apparently that was the cause of death.
While all officers are encouraged to use non-lethal means to subdue a subject if they deem it feasible, they may use deadly force if they believe they're in imminent threat of harm.
Mm-hmm.
This might be a tough sell in Tulsa, where the man who was shot had his hands in the air, and the officer has been charged with manslaughter, but an easier one in Charlotte, where the suspect appeared to be holding a gun and refusing to drop it.
You've heard, and you've heard some of the, I don't want to call them excuses, but you've heard some of the descriptions from police about what the, you know, alleged perpetrator was doing at the time.
Right.
And often it gets to the point where they say, well, I felt my life was in danger. Well, the guy had his arms up in the air. Yes, but it looked like he was about to lower them. And you kind of wonder. I mean, I know their judgment is different than the average person who you know can look back on the thing and go, well, you shouldn't have done that. You shouldn't have done that. You know, hindsight being 20/20. But when
see, here's the deal. You and I would both be shot by a perpetrator.
Probably.
Yeah.
Except for the fact that you and I probably would both be hiding behind in the nearest building.
True.
I don't think we'd make good police at all. You know, and I admire the police for actually wading into situations like that that most people would avoid because it is their job.
All right. We have a bulletin from the newsroom. Rick Worthington. Rick.
Paul J., you got me?
Yeah.
Hey, just wanted to let you guys know there was some breaking news. Wanted to share with you.
Got a lockdown.
Mountain View High School was on lockdown for a short time. We got a call in the newsroom about that. We called over to Ada County Dispatch, which has given us the indication that it is all clear now. There was a lockdown that was conducted at Mountain View High School. They're calling it a technical glitch of some kind. However, police treated it as a normal situation. They came out, they cleared the hallways, went door to door. So all clear given at Mountain View High School after a brief lockdown this morning.
Excellent. Thanks, Rick. Anything else happens in that case or details, Rick will have it on KBOI News at the top of the hour.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay, tasers have a 35-foot reach. Their effective and safe use requires a great deal of training that many departments don't provide, according to National Police Training, a training website for law enforcement. They're also concerned, and we've heard this, that tasers are misused or overused, sometimes with fatal consequences.
Yeah, that's true.
So you're darned if you do, darned if you don't sometimes. David Klinger, a nationally recognized policing expert at the University of Missouri in St. Louis, argues that officers should only use a taser if they believe it can prevent a situation from escalating to deadly force. Klinger also contends tasers should only be used in cases where a second officer can provide lethal coverage, like El Cajon,
right.
I suppose. All right, got to take a break. It's 9:46.
Students are back in class after a temporary lockdown at Mountain View High School. We'll have a follow-up on that and more local news after the top of the hour. Right now, back to Paul, Jay, and Chris.
All right, thank you. KBOI News Time, 9:50.
Got some instant messages. Bobby of Boise says, in the case where a taser was used, but then the assailant was shot, they did not allow any time for the taser to take effect. He was shot almost simultaneously. And it's like we said,
yeah.
One policeman, there were two there on the scene. One pulled a taser, the other one pulled a gun. Dave of Boise says, why can't the cops use a taser first with a firearm backup, if possible,
what they're supposed to do.
Even without backup, a taser is designed to incapacitate a person. Why not beanbags or rubber bullets if they have to use a gun? I know this will not be sufficient for all cases, but why not when there are no weapons in sight at the time of engagement? Again, probably a judgment call by the police. And again, I'm not going to pretend to understand what it's like to be in a tense situation like that. I've been in tense situations, but none of them involved bullets. H.G. McCall says, Queen Elizabeth, have you seen her ride an excellent horsewoman still?
Yeah, she's in her 80s, right?
Might even be, well, yeah, close to 90.
Close to 90.
Close to 90. She's been, I think it's been 64 years now that she's been the Queen of England. And she passed up Queen Victoria as the longest serving queen.
Mm-hmm.
But I the last time I saw even a picture of her on a horse was probably during the 70s. There's that famous picture of she's reviewing the guards and the one has fainted.
Oh, yeah,
and she's riding past that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Curtis of Boise says, Gary Johnson, who's that? Wait, isn't he the ex-Mexican president who is now the prime minister of Aleppo? Ha, ha, ha. He's the ex-New Mexico governor, but not the ex-Mexican president.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones and Jim of Boise. Jim, good morning.
Morning. I'd like to make a quick comment on, you know, what Brad was saying about, charging on an individual basis.
Yep.
Well, anyway, I used to videotape weddings, bar mitzvahs, bat mitzvahs, and quinceañeras, and I used to love it. And there were times when I wished I knew when people would call for a job, you know, how much they could afford.
You didn't ask them?
Well, no, I didn't. But, I mean, I would rather do the job. I love doing it. I'd rather do the job. I mean, the job to me was more important than getting a particular amount of money.
Okay. But well, anyway, you should negotiate something.
I know. I know. Well, I mean, it'd feel kind of stupid saying, well, my price is, you know, so $500. Well, could you afford $400? How about $300? You know, it kind of feels stupid. Like, but if I knew beforehand.
Well, but what you do, Jim, is you go, yeah, I can do that. I'm free for that Saturday or Sunday, whatever. What were you thinking of paying? How much did you want done?
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Dang.
You see, I can do that part, but I can't shoot the wedding.
I mean, to me, it was a lot of fun going to these social events and everything, you know.
Yeah.
So, anyway, take care.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
I kind of like the idea that you have a set price for things and that you have based that price upon the quality of the work you do and that people should expect to pay that if they hire you. On the other hand, if you go a couple of weeks without being hired, I can see where you might start negotiating.
No question. Let's go quickly to John of Napa. John, you got a minute?
Good morning. Yeah, I just wanted to give you some information on, you know, the order of how things, police officers are using their weapon.
Okay.
And not that I have all the answers. I just was going to throw out a video in the 1970s about some FBI agents. This true story had some, I think, bank robbers cornered in a parking lot, and they had, like many 14, they had a higher caliber weapons. And they ended up killing two and severely wounded the rest of them, of the FBI agents. And the first three shots that the FBI agents fired were lethal and it could have stopped the whole thing, but they were 9mm. And so that opened the debate for 9mm versus a bigger bore.
Yeah.
But if you want to look that up, that explains exactly why officers, you know, you can't just shoot somebody and wait for the full effect.
Yeah, wait for them to fall.
You have no idea what that's going to be. All right, see you guys later. Thanks.
Right, good stuff. Thanks, John.
Brandon of Boise says, with texting and driving, it's all behavioral economics. As long as the price for breaking the law is low, behavior won't change on a large scale. In my opinion, it's a significant problem, and I worry about whether a driver is going to hit a pedestrian, bicyclist, other car, etc. I walk my dog often, and probably half the drivers I see pass are distracted by their phones, sometimes drifting across the center line or into the bike lane. Normally, I'm not big into rules and regulations, but like drunk driving, someone else's negligent behavior could impact myself or my family if a crash happened.
Yep, you're distracted one way or another. Something to think about with Mike Rogers coming up next here in News Talk 670 KBOI. Sorry for those who didn't get to on the phone calls this morning. Call back later in the week.
Something to think about with Mike Rogers.
The Geico Gecko has a new product to sell you, cyber insurance. Major insurance companies throughout America are selling cyber insurance to businesses large and small. Can't come soon enough. We have seen massive cyber thefts from Target and TJ Maxx and Sony Pictures and hospitals, banks, you name it. Now, the cyber insurance market has surpassed $1 billion, a huge new cost to our economy. But likely money well spent if your company suffers a debilitating attack. While this is happening, someone has been probing the defenses of the companies that run critical pieces of our internet. These attacks are significantly larger than the ones these companies are used to seeing. Attackers are looking for the specific weaknesses in these networks. If someone actually succeeds in bringing down the internet, even for a short time, these cyber insurance premiums are going to go through the roof. $1 billion will seem like a pittance. Something to think about. I'm Mike Rogers.